Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, you always know that there's something special on the Donna Sebo show just about every single day, and this day is not an exception. You know, most of the country is absolutely baking with hot temps. Well, we are going to be talking about something that is absolutely awesome for those hot weather days, actually for any day of the year. We're going to be talking about ice cream. Now, before we get into that, we're going to be giving out our toll-free number where you'll be able to call in later on in the show, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Now, as I said, for those of you who are listening, and we've got listeners all over the country, and if you're in Oklahoma, if you're in New York, just about every place in this wonderful country of ours, except for the Pacific Northwest, is just absolutely simmering and in what you would say the warm temps. Well, what's better than ice cold ice cream? And my guest today is Michael Turbeck. He is considered the Sundae King, and we're saying S-U-N-D-A-E-K-I-N-G. And it's more than a month of Sundays. There's 85 recipes in this book. This was so much fun to go through this book. Michael is in Ithaca, New York, which is the home of some very special ice cream history. We're going to learn about that. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, it's just a delight. Ice cream. I have such wonderful memories regarding ice cream when I was a little girl because one of our neighbors had an ice cream maker, and we're going to talk about the history of ice cream, but I can remember we'd all take turns making ice cream, and it was peach, fresh peach ice cream. Oh, it was just
well, we all
wonderful.
We all have those childhood memories. That's why it's called a comfort food. It's one of those dishes that sort of reminds us of our childhood, and we always sort of feel good, sort of food for the soul.
Absolutely. Forget calories. No way. We're not even going to go there, because we have got some absolutely awesome recipes, so you may want to have a pad of paper and a pen handy to write down some of these doozies that we're going to share with you. All right, Michael, let's go into a little bit of history. I know it's somewhere with ancient Rome, but why don't you tell us about Kofi and some other things that were, well, we want to say the ancestors of this luscious stuff that we enjoy today.
Well, you know, ice cream, we've always been a culture as human beings. I think we've always wanted a treat, and we've always had our sweet tooth. That's followed us all through history, and that idea of sweetening up something cold has gone from, as you mentioned, many, many cultures. I think what we think of as ice cream really began to appear in Italy and then in France. And I love telling the story about how ice cream made its way to America, which is, of course, America has become almost synonymous with ice cream culture. And it was a great fellow named Thomas Jefferson who was serving as the ambassador, the American ambassador to France, and he was a real foodie back in those days. He loved to cook, and he loved discovering new foods. And when he discovered the recipe for vanilla ice cream, he absolutely fell in love. He brought that recipe back, and America has never been the same.
No kidding. I'm going to quote some statistics that you gave in here. I just love this kind of stuff. Does Americans eat more ice cream per capita than people of any other nationality? And most ice cream, I mean, this took some real serious study here. Most ice cream is eaten between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. That gives you some reflective thought. And more is downed on Sunday than on any other day of the week. And New Englanders eat an average of 24 quarts of ice cream per year, the most of any region, while Americans as a whole average 15 quarts. Just thinking of 15 quarts of ice cream, I can't imagine me eating 15 quarts of ice cream. Now, you know what I was surprised about is that it's more of a comfort food for men than for women. That was a big one.
Well, you know, they say that, but, you know, the story is, and it goes back to, you can see this in the old movies, the old comedies from the 30s, where the settings for the boy and girl were always seemed to be in the soda fountain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fellow orders the big Sundae dish, and he ends up sharing it with the young lady who probably wasn't going to really order one to begin with. So I think those statistics are skewed a little bit in real life.
So you're going to say we gals sneak a little bit more than what we want to admit to.
I think you probably do. I won't tell. No.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about ice cream churns. Now, this is, I think, fun history. Because we don't think twice about going into the store and, you know, picking up a gallon, 2 gallon. I mean, you can get these huge tubs of ice cream at various stores that could feed a whole slew of people. And we just take that for granted today. But as I said, I remember the ice cream churn. Give us a little bit of history about that.
Well, you know, the ice cream churn is the was the invention of a wonderful Philadelphia housewife named Nancy Johnson. And before Nancy dreamed up this idea for the paddle that you could make at home, there were some very antiquated methods of making ice cream, and it usually involved, of course, ice and salting ice, and it was a very very sloppy way, and of course we're talking about the men versus women here, and it took a woman to have this brainstorm, and of course she ended up selling her patent for the hand cranked ice cream making machine, and sure enough a wholesaler began selling them for $3 each, which meant that this very humble housewife really brought the idea of having ice cream from only the homes of the rich and famous really to the average home. And so I think that was a particularly interesting result of her invention.
And this was in the 1800s.
Sort of democratization of ice cream, I guess I could
say. Absolutely. But this was back in the 1800s. The year that she was, I mean, it was, what, let's see, the wholesaler was in 1847 selling them. I've got your book in front of me. 1847, he was selling them for $3 a piece. And if you think about it, relative to the value of the dollar, that was still pretty pricey. That would have been, in some instances, a luxury item for some families back in the 1800s.
Well, you know, you've got me there, and I guess I don't know what $3, what that was the equivalent of, but when you begin to read about her and about the early ice cream history, it is quite remarkable that that the average person really hadn't even tasted ice cream until this invention, and it really did bring ice cream into a lot more homes, and I think it probably just the way people would save up for something special today, they probably saved up for those ice cream makers back in those days, even if it was that saving up for all those nickels for the $3 purchase.
Now, serving ice cream was something that was a bit of a challenge. And there was an African-American who became interested in mechanics, and he devised a tool to mold and serve ice cream. What is that man's name? And tell us a little bit about
it. Let's see. You have almost got me on this one.
How about Alfred Crail?
Did you... Who was that fellow? I've lost track of his name. And I
Alfred?
Know what
was Alfred
his name?
Crail?
Okay, and that's right. And he was, you know what, he was interesting because he was, if I recall correctly, he had been a chef and a White House chef. And that was his background. And then he went off to, really, almost unknown at that time, create this patent for the scoop, and you know, people struggled the way I suppose you would struggle today if you didn't have that scoop, but and we don't remember him, do we? But yeah, that was one of those sort of obscure facts that made its way into the book. Thank you for reminding me.
Well, it's fun when you come across those obscure facts because again. We go in, and whether it is frozen yogurt, frozen ice cream, we just take so much for granted, and we don't realize all of these different people back in the 1800s, early 1900s, that were coming up with all of these various innovations for this absolutely delectable treat that we call ice cream. And for those of you that are tuning in to the show right now, this is a wonderful book. It is so much fun. It would be just great to share if you were a teacher in a classroom. If you love ice cream and would love to know about its history, and we've got some scrumptious recipes we're going to share with you, too. More than a month of Sundays. They have 85 recipes in this book, and my guest is Michael Turback. He is known as the Sunday King, S-U-N-D-A-E, because that's the correct spelling. We'll go into a little bit of history about how Sundays came about, too. But let's take a look at a recipe that you have in here, and it's just, I just love this. You have some information about Benjamin Franklin.
Wonderful.
And you have a recipe called the Broken Heart. Now, this is what it is. It's a slice of brick vanilla ice cream on a six-inch plate. You cover the ice cream with fresh, sweetened, and slightly crushed strawberries, garnish it with whipped cream, and top off with two whole strawberries and serve with two Nabisco wafers. Now, that's for broken hearts. Yes.
And it was, of course, invented by a couple of fellows who I got to meet just even before they opened their place in Philadelphia. It's a restaurant that's it's more a soda fountain than a restaurant. It's called the Franklin Fountain, and they opened it in very nearby the home that Benjamin Franklin lived in, and of course they use a lot of their other recipes, themes from Benjamin Franklin for their Sundays. They have a lightning rod Sunday that's a sort of, it's one of those giant pretzel rods in the top to finish it off. If you're ever in Philadelphia, it's a must visit. It's a wonderful, recreated, old-time soda fountain called Franklin Fountain.
What a way to tour the country. You've got all of these listings of places to stop in every state of the Union. What a fun way to go around the country stopping at all these ice cream places, and you'd be smiling. Now, if you really wanted to be effective, walk, don't drive, because you'll have to burn up all those calories. Oh, my goodness. But if you're not salivating right now, if you don't have a sweet tooth, by golly, by the time we're finished talking about this book, A Month of Sundays, you should be. Now, let's go into the history of 1892.
Oh, very important year in history.
Yes.
Ice cream history, we should say. And it all happened here in Ithaca, New York. And what happened is, we had an ice cream parlor. Actually, it was a pharmacy, and of course the soda fountains, the early soda fountains, were all sort of installed in one corner or another of the pharmacies. And ours was called the Platt and Colt Pharmacy, and Chester Platt was the owner. And he would welcome every Sunday after his Sunday sermon, he would welcome the local Unitarian minister by the name of John Scott. And John Scott would always come in and have a nickel dish of ice cream. One day in 1892, the Reverend Scott came in, and Platt thought he'd do something special that day. We don't know why, but he decided to be creative and poured some cherry syrup over the top and then placed a candied cherry at the top.
Oh, my.
The Reverend was so excited, and after tasting it, was so delighted by the taste. He said, this dish needs a name, and why not name it after the day on which it was invented? And of course, that day it was a Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and it became the ice cream Sunday, spelled the same as the day of the week.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it was later changed for there was another really religious reason that it was changed. There were very conservative communities around the country who didn't like the idea of a decadent dessert being named after the Sabbath. So, sure enough, Evanston, Illinois led the way, and they forced the change of the spelling, and that seemed to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of the Sunday caught on quickly, and the name change or the spelling change caught on, and by the turn of the century, we didn't have the internet and didn't have national newspapers, but the reputation of this dessert spread so quickly by the turn of the century, you could find recipes for Sundays in all of the soda fountain manuals, and you could find Sundays in practically every ice cream parlor in the United States.
Well, Evanston has a bit of history that's not so favorable, because they actually outlawed ice cream. which was just so funny to me. I imagine that they're forking out on it now, because I don't see how that would have stood in place for very long. Ice cream is just absolutely fabulous stuff. Now, the maraschino cherry, and everybody that ever has ever gone in to get a sundae, they always, the banana splits, are always going to have that beautiful red maraschino cherry on top. And I love the history you shared about that, because that originated in Italy. Now, what was the year when the maraschino cherry started getting imported into the United States?
Well, you know, you're going to catch me again on this one, because you probably have a copy of the book in front of you.
I certainly do.
You're quizzing me on this. Well, you know, if you, and it sounds like you've really read from cover to cover. And
I have.
If you did, you know that there are probably 1,000 pieces of trivia like this that
are packed into
the book. And it was so much fun putting them together. I don't remember the date. But I will tell you that that original cherry, and we did the research locally on this, and we found out that that idea, well, you know, you can imagine that before 1892, there certainly were people who were pouring sweet things and maybe syrups over the top of of ice cream. That wasn't the invention. That really, what we think of as the sundae today, I think became the sundae when that fellow, Chester Platt, attached the name sundae to that dish. And, of course, that putting that cherry at the top became an icon that just will never disappear. And that was that was a cherry imported from Italy, that very first cherry. And I don't know what year it was, but you can help me out with that.
I certainly can. It was 1890 when it was being imported into the United States, and in 1896, the different cherry processors here in the U.S. wanted to figure out how they could become a part of this market for people with a sweet tooth. They saw how the Italian import was really selling very well, and they're using something that's a product of the state that I'm in, which is the state of Washington. It's the Royal Anne cherry. And now, today, according to the information you have here, Gray and Company of Portland, Oregon, is the country's leading supplier of maraschino cherries with 85% share of the market. They ship out 6 million cherries a day. 6 million cherries a day. And that's hard to even fathom.
And those folks should be thanking Ithaca, New York for that.
Absolutely.
Their great economy, I'm sure, that they have raising cherries out there.
Absolutely. Okay. So now we've talked about some wonderful ingredients. We've talked about a bit of the history here. Let's touch on a piece of history that is just lip-smacking wonderful. I don't know very many children that don't know about this. And it's the famous dish called the banana split. I mean, if you really want to be able to gain weight in just a few seconds, sit down and pork out on one of these. But what's really fun is when you can share it with 6 other people, so you're not going to have as many calories going into your tummy.
Really? Really? Well, listen, bananas are very healthy. So it's like a health food dish, don't you think?
I love it. It's great.
Well, so, I have to tell you about the banana split. I had the occasion of being part of the 100th birthday celebration of the banana split back in 2004. And, of course, it celebrated what happened in Latrobe, Pennsylvania in 1904. The banana was a very exotic fruit that many people didn't really know about until just shortly before that time. It was just really, I think, in the very latter part of the 1800s that the first bananas were shipped into this country. And so here was this fellow, a soda jerk in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, who was trying to figure out what to do with a banana, and he was inspired to make 3 mini sundaes in between a split banana. And he did that in, as I said, in 1904. And what happened into the banana split was I don't know how quickly it spread, but it began to become popular. It was spotted as an idea by the original founder of Walgreens drugstore, and he made the banana split sort of his signature sundae.
Mm-hmm.
And as his chain of of drug stores began to grow and spread across the country. So did the fame of the banana split. So you could credit David Strickler for inventing it, but you could also credit Mr. Walgreen as someone who really was responsible for marketing the banana split so effectively.
Now, I want to tell you there, ladies and gentlemen, there is etiquette in eating a banana split, and you're laughing at me, Michael. I mean, this is out of your book.
I'm laughing because the fellow who told me about the etiquette was originally from Elmira, New York, which is just a short distance away from Ithaca, and he had moved his family down to Ocean City, Maryland, and opened an ice cream parlor. And he started what he called the Banana Split Hall of Fame. And he makes a giant banana split. And anybody who could finish it gets their name on this Hall of Fame. And I was smart enough to ask him, when I interviewed him, what is the proper etiquette for eating? And I guess you've read the book, so you know that you must, with every spoonful, get a little bit of ice cream, a little bit of topping, and a little bit of banana.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get a little bit of everything, then that's you're what's the term for faux pas? Then you're making a mistake, and you're not abiding by the proper etiquette of eating a banana split. That would be I think it's great, and that really is, if you don't go all out and order a banana split, then that's certainly the way you want.
Now, there are so many very famous companies. We have Good Humor. We have Dreyer. We have Ghirardelli. There was Howard Johnson that was just famous for his ice cream across the country. What I found really intriguing is that you give a bit of history about how ice cream was dehydrated in World War II. And there's a B-29 involved, and their slogan was keep them buying to keep them flying. Keep them buying to keep them flying. What a slogan.
You write a book like this, and of course this is the second version of the book. The original book was A Month of Sundays, and this is sort of the updated version, and it could be continually updated because I always learn more and more about ice cream and ice cream history and ice cream folklore as days go by. And ice cream really was an inspiration and used to inspire the soldiers during the war, so much so that there were ice cream making machines on ships all throughout the Pacific. And that idea that you were so far from home and so far from the sweetheart and so far from the life you led, and here you are in the middle of the Pacific fighting for your country, you deserve to have ice cream, I guess, according to the government. And they made sure to install ice cream. And I just found this out. I had thought it was maybe just one or two ships, but I've since found out that it was a very widespread program, and it was an incentive, I guess, to those fellows that were fighting for it.
Well, some of the information that you have here is that some of the crews placed a can of the cream mixture in the rear compartment of a B-29, and by the time they returned from a sortie, freezing high altitude temperatures and the plane's vibration, it combined to produce a batch of ice cream ready to eat. I mean, talk about innovations. I mean, here are these guys out there in their planes, and they're involved in all this activity.
You can almost picture Earl Flynn as that character, right? If it was a movie, he was the fellow who brought the ingredients up in the plane.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Amazing. Now, you have a quote in here by Voltaire. Said, ice cream is exquisite. What a pity it isn't illegal. Now, what he was talking about and why, I just think, my goodness. That's a very poor attitude. And then you also have another quote in here, and it's about, well, not a quote so much. It's about a woman called Margie, and she had a very, very special place. Margie's, what is the name of her place?
Margie's Candies. And
right.
I will tell you that I, of course, visited almost every... place that I write about, if you go to the final chapter, where you have 500 places, I really didn't visit every one of those 500. But I had a pretty good network of people who I know around the country who make those recommendations. So that's how it got in there. But Margie's was one of those places that when I first sat down to write the original book, I was told that you cannot write a book about ice cream or ice cream sundaes without writing about Margie's. And I will tell you that the fellow who runs Margie's, he and I were brought to tears during the writing of the during my interviews with him for the writing of the book and in talking about the nostalgia of this place. It's a fabulous, fabulous place in Chicago. And when you look around, it's a tiny place. And when you look around, there are pictures that were taken throughout its history. And there's a picture of Al Capone, the gangster from Chicago, who used to sit in the corner. He made sure to sit in the corner in Margie's when he ate his sundaes so that he could catch somebody in case they were coming in to rub him out. But following all through history, every performer that seemed to come to visit Chicago always heard about Margie's, and there were famous movie stars and pictures of movie stars. And then the Beatles, when they gave their concert at Comiskey Park, they after the concert they went over to Margie's, and Margie herself was dancing with John Lennon. There's a picture of them. And Michael Jackson brought an entourage. They spent the whole night eating ice cream sundaes. And there's just so much history, and there's so many personalities. It's such a beloved place in Chicago. And, of course, Margie herself lived it to be in well into her 80s and has passed on. But her son, once she passed on, he left his career as a podiatrist and actually took over his mother's job, put on the apron. He's been making ice cream and toppings ever since. He's a terrific guy, and it's such a terrific place. And I would say that anyone who finds themselves in Chicago, a great town, by the way, I love visiting Chicago.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful city.
Really needs to get over to Margie's Candies. Margie's Candies, but it really is primarily a soda fountain.
Uh-huh, it is. But I'll tell you what, this book is so much fun. A month of sundaes, and they've got 85 recipes in here, and Michael Turbak has been my guest today, and he is known as the Sunday King, S-U-N-D-A-E. But I've got to share something with you, because you mentioned in here one of my favorite actresses, Loretta Young. And when she was interviewed, I just loved it. This just changed.
Don't you love that story?
Oh, I love it. She maintained a rapturous expression on her face during countless takes. Of course, she's an Oscar winner, an Academy Award winner. And she finally admitted what enabled her to have that dewy-eyed, absolutely captivating look when the camera was on her. Whenever she was in the arms of a dashing leading man, she pretended she was face-to-face with a hot fudge sundae. Oh, I just loved it. I thought that was so great. Now, Michael, I know you've got a wonderful website that people can go to. This book is so much fun, absolute fun. And for the family, if you wanted to really wow some people with some history and serve something special for dessert, this book is just great. A month of sundaes, more than a month of sundaes. And there's, again, 85 recipes, and there's 500 of America's top Sunday, ice cream Sunday places. Michael, what's your website?
It's icecreamsunday.com, and of course we all know that the Sunday is spelled with an A-E, so it is icecreamsunday with an A-E.com.
Well, Michael, it has been a delight. I love the trivia. I think the story and the history of ice cream is awesome. And I'm so glad you are having so much fun with the passion of your life, and I'm sure you are just keeping yourself so nice and trim and jogging at least 45 miles after each.
I do run, and that does help, believe me.
I can imagine. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Go to Michael's
website.
It's such
a pleasure. My pleasure as well. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Michael. IceCreamSundae.com, S-U-N-D-A-E, if you want more information. Donna Sebo here. We are going to take a break. Now, don't you go away. I know you're hungry. It's ice cream time. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, And welcome to the Hour of Mind Power. I've got some wonderful things I want to share with you. And I know we've been having some equipment problems, so let me give out the wonderful website for Michael Turbach, and that is icecreamsunday.com. That's icecream, S-U-N-D-A-E, sunday.com. Now, I wanted to share some information with you quickly because, as you know, the Washington State Renaissance Fantasy Fair is going to be starting this weekend, August 5th, 6th, 12th, 13th, 19th, and 20th. That's going to be at the Mentor Creek Ranch. If I sound like I'm a little excited about it, I am. I've had a wonderful association with people that put this wonderful event together, and this is my fifth year of being involved with them. And I encourage you to go, if you like activities like this, to WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. Or you can go to their 800 number, 359-5948, if you like. This is a family event that goes on for 3 weekends. People come in from all over the country to attend. There's wonderful activities that are going on, and it's such a delight to participate in it because not only do the people coming out have a good time, but everybody that is actively involved in it, they really get into this 16th century theme, and it is so much fun. So I invite you, go to WashingtonRenFair.com, and remember that's Washington, R-E-N-F-A-I-R-E.com, because you can get your tickets in advance. And when you get them in advance, you're going to get a discount on that, and they have special family rates, all kinds of good things that are happening. So just be aware that that is something that you will be able to enjoy. But if you have any additional questions, if you're for some reason not able to reach them, then don't hesitate to give me a call at my office number, which is 800-872-8852. Now, telephone lines are open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, the telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. There is always going to be a lesson of one type or another that we're going to be experiencing in life. And sometimes it comes in ways and manners that we don't always expect. There is a gentleman by the name of Church out of Louisville, Kentucky, and he shared a very special experience that he had. He said he once had to fly to Cleveland, Ohio, for a business meeting, and when he was getting on the plane, he wanted to see, if he could, who was going to be sitting next to him. And actually, he was hoping that the seat next to him was going to be empty because he was so tired, so absolutely wiped out. The last thing he wanted to do was to make small talk with anybody that might sit next to him, especially a stranger, which is what you would usually account on a business flight. And he said, I just wasn't in the mood. I was just wiped out. He said, to my dismay, there was an elderly gentleman dressed in priest attire who was sitting in the seat next to mine, and he said, oh, I thought, oh, my goodness, this guy's going to want to talk the whole trip. So when he glanced up, this elderly priest glanced up to Church, Church said, oh, I just sort of let my eyes go into another direction. All I knew is that I wanted to go to sleep. Now, as you all know, when you fly on a plane, you have pre-flight procedures, and he happened to look over at the priest, Church did, just out of the corner of his eye. And the priest was just sitting there as if he was expecting Church to start up a conversation. So, just out of courtesy, Church decided he would do that, and he would chat with him and just make some small talk. And he said, as it turned out, he never did get any sleep. He said, we ended up having a conversation that lasted the entire flight, and it made it seem like we'd only been in the air for 5 minutes. And I know we've got a caller on the line, so we're going to go to that caller, but we'll finish the rest of this story and share with you what it was that Church learned. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Tacoma, and initial is M, like Mary.
All right. That's Tacoma, Washington.
Uh-huh.
All right, dear. And this is wonderful that you're calling in. How'd you learn about the show?
My girlfriend, and I actually have listened to you when you were on another radio show, so.
Well, how wonderful. Thank you for becoming a part of the listenership on the new show.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a delight having you. Okay, and what I'm looking at, first thing right off the bat, is a need for you to be very thoughtful before you talk to people about your concerns, your worries, your apprehensions. The reason I ask you to be discriminating is that there are some people around you that rather than being supportive of you and giving you good information, you're going to find that they're going to actually wallow in, oh, you poor thing, oh my goodness, life is so tough. And by the time you get through talking with these people, you're going to feel like you are in this quagmire of misery, and you're going to think you can never get out of certain situations. Be discriminating about who you spend your time with and who you talk with, because it makes a difference. If you're wanting to do problem solving, address those individuals that are consciously alert and present with what you're telling them and may have some very good information to share with you. You don't want people to try to make decisions for you, but you want to be able to have those individuals that can say, you know, I've been through this situation and this is how I handled it. You might want to look at something this way or the other way. You see what I'm trying to get across? So if you do that, because I am looking at you expanding your world relative to work, relative to an environment, a social activity, you're wanting to broaden your interaction with other conditions, people, and situations. Again, be discriminating when you share your concerns or fears. Remember, you want people that are going to be supportive in the right way of you so that you can move forward with a sense of having information to work with and not feeling as if someone has compressed you into a vacuum of, gee whiz, I guess I can't do too much about this, that, or the other. I don't want you to go there.
Yeah. So I've just been thinking about that, as a matter of fact, what you've been talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is it that you wanted to talk to me about today? What question?
Well, you know, I've had this dilemma. I used to belong to a spiritual group, and I've been trying to figure out my abilities psychically.
Uh-huh.
And I've come to, like, this swamp where I kind of doubt things now, and I doubt my own belief in myself, and and I just don't know what I'm capable of as far as psychically and where to go, because I just feel kind of stuck right now, you know, not progressing, and I don't know what to do to kick it again or something, you know?
All right. Let me share a couple of points of information with you, dear. First of all, psychic ability is never lost. If you had this wonderful opportunity to experience certain things and you go, wow, I really want to develop this, you have got a lot of options today available to you. But again, remember what I said about who you choose to talk with.
Yeah.
Because you want to be able to be around people that are going to give you understanding and insight. And I really appreciate your trust in me and calling me today, because I think I'll be able to give you some tips. I won't be able to go into a whole bunch of detail. But I will say to you, first of all, I want you to get into the habit of reading, because there are so many different ways that the intuitive process works. There's no one venue. It's just as variable as molecules in the universe. What you will find is that there are certain ways that people will demonstrate skills and talents. And what you need to do is, as a student, have the attitude, I'm curious. How do you do this? What kind of tools do you use? Why have you chosen these tools? Don't be afraid to ask questions of people. That is what's going to enable you to find areas that you can experiment in. Now, the reason I tell you to read is because that is one of what I feel the safest ways for you to explore all kinds of experiences that other people have had. And when you go into the bookstores today, my goodness, there's just a plethora of material.
Yeah.
And you can go into used bookstores. If you're on a budget, go into the used bookstores. The key is to understand you want to find what feels good to you. Then what you need to do is know that you're going to need to test. You're going to need to experiment. Let's say you're interested in the tarot cards, and or maybe you're interested in the pendulum. None of this is bad. They're all tools because you're the catalyst. The element, the tool, is just that. In and of itself, it has no energy whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So when you experiment, that's good. There are certain activities that come up, like here in the state of Washington, there's the Boeing Fair that comes up. There's different things. You can always check my website for different events, if you like, that I participate in, where I'm able to interact with the public and where I do speaking. But mm-hmm. And that's on DelphiInternational.com. That's my website. But regardless, it's questioning people. If you find yourself having an opportunity to go to an event where somebody's going to be reading cards or someone else is going to be using some other kind of tool, just approach it with curiosity. Don't try and make it into anything special. And practice. If something you've done in the past has been an exploratory experience for you and you said, wow, this seemed to be something I could do, that's the only way you're going to be able to develop your skill is by exploring, asking questions, and experimenting. And above all, do not be afraid. Don't be afraid, because all of this is practice. It's like learning how to ride a bike. To use the skills of mind, there's just so much. There's a wonderful man, Russell Targ, T-A-R-G. He has a number of books out on remote viewing. There's all kinds of people that have written about psychic experience. And I'll tell you something, dear, and I know we're going to go to break pretty soon, so I'll have to close. But you will know if something rings true.
Yeah.
You will know inside yourself, gee, this feels comfortable, or I don't like this. Yeah. Put it away. Put away what you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is your journey. You're the one that can be discriminating. And remember, when it comes to this, there is, I know, anything with a psychic area, there's so much flim-flam, that is true, hon. But understand, this is a natural talent. It belongs to you. It belongs to everyone on this planet. Nobody has an exclusive contract with it. And it does demonstrate it in various ways. I'm going to have to say goodbye because we've got to go on a break.
Thank you for everything.
Oh, you're so welcome. And be sure to tell your friends about the show.
Oh, yes. All of my friends, I will. Okay.
All right. You have
a fabulous day. You too.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Telephone line is open, 877-876-5227. We'll be back in just a moment, and I'll finish the rest of the story, too. Don't go away. Hi, this is Donna Sebo with the Hour of Mind Power, and don't forget, this is the first weekend coming up for the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and I am excited. It's always exciting to be a part of this 16th century village environment. This is put on in the first three weekends in August, and it is a wonderful event. You can hear the pounding hooves of great war horses charging down the list. They're carrying armored knights jousting for king, queen, country, or the hand of a fair maiden. And we've got a lot of those walking around at this event. And we even have a pickle lady. We have all kinds of people. We have court jesters. We have magicians. We have wonderful, wonderful performers, balladeers, wonderful people. And you will see all of this activity when you walk through the gates of the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. And as I mentioned to you, we have people fly in from all over the country to participate in this. And we've even had people from overseas, vendors who have brought their wares to be able to share it with those of you that would come out. Now, go to WashingtonRenFair.com. That's the website. Don't forget to put the E on the end of fair. And you can buy your ticket online, and you'll save money to boot. And there are family specials that are there. And this is out at the Mentor Creek Ranch, which is 10215 State Road 302, that's out in Gig Harbor. And there's just so much going on. Eight stages of entertainment. Fabulous, fabulous food. Wonderful people. I think one of the most delightful parts of this is when you have a chance to talk with some of the craftsmen and craftswomen that are out there doing things that were done in the 16th century. And you think of what we have today in technology. It really is great. It is pure family fun and entertainment. And it's starting this weekend, the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. So go to their wonderful website, WashingtonRenFair.com, and we'll be sure to have you right there. Oh, and I'm going to have a booth there. Look for the bright golden yellow banners. They're huge with big red lions on them. That's what my booth symbol is, and you'll be able to find me in there, and I'm doing little mini consultations for people while they're there, and I'll have a scab full of books to be able to sell to you as well. Now, when I was, before I went to the caller, and by the way, if you want to call me, 877-876-5227, if you'd like to let me light up your life with a little bit of insight. Before I went to our caller, I was telling you about, well, a lesson in humility that was being taught to a man by the name of Church in Louisville, Kentucky. Remember, he was on the plane, and he wanted to sleep, but instead he ended up talking with this elderly priest that was sitting next to him. He said they had the conversation that lasted the entire flight, and it made it seem like they'd only been in the air for 5 minutes. Quite a turnaround of attitude, don't you think? He said, I shared some of the concepts I had learned in becoming a certified facilitator of a new training course for my corporation. Now, when we were getting ready, after the plane landed, when we were getting ready to leave, he asked him if he could use some of what Church had discussed with him in one of his sermons. He was very flattered, and he quickly agreed to that. He said, my whole attitude just totally turned around. It felt good knowing that I had not been so self-centered and selfish with my time. And I felt so good that about the fact that he was going to use some of my thinking in his sermons. I thought about how smart I was that I could teach someone of his mature years and experience something new. Well, a couple of days after this experience, all of a sudden, Church pulled himself up mentally and went, oh boy, wow, was I stupid. He said, here I am, a young man in my early 30s, and this gentleman that I was talking to was a very learned and wise 80-year-old plus individual who had dedicated his life to a single purpose. He said, this man had experience that, well, was more than a half a century longer than what I had had. And he said, clearly his knowledge was far beyond mine, and yet he had the humility to be totally open to learning from each and every person he came in contact with. He said, I was given a lesson in humility that I won't ever forget. And this elderly gentleman did give me this lesson by the actions that he exhibited. He said, not his words. His life was his lesson, and I, as the student, finally awakened to what it was. Isn't that profound? Sometimes we can get very arrogant in our conversations with others and our ego gets all inflated. And that's not all bad. But we don't give credit to the people that maybe we're sharing things with. I think one of the best things we can ever do for ourselves is when we're sharing information with other people is to also be interested in what their stories might be. It's amazing what you can learn. That's one thing I love about taxicab drivers and being on plane flights. Wow, all kinds of good things occur, and it's just a delight and a joy to be able to communicate with these people, to be able to interact with them. It's really fabulous. Everybody has a story, and you know what? When you're willing to listen to those stories, you will never, ever know the word boredom. Not ever. You'll never know what it is, because you'll always be finding out something unique and new. Oh, my gracious. So many wonderful stories I've experienced in my life with different people, and it makes you realize what a very, very small world we live in, and how very much in common we as individuals have with each other. Someone said to me not too long ago, everyone, to one degree or another, has a hard life. We all have to work. We all have to go through situations, and there may be some people out there that you'll say, oh, that person never works. How do you know? How do you know what that person has gone through unless you've talked with them? So people are fascinating, and it's the stories. Today we were talking about ice cream and the history of ice cream. Ice cream wouldn't exist without people. People that decided they wanted to design something that was delicious for the palate and refreshing for the soul and spirit. Keep that in mind. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're also going to find that you can design your day just the way that you want it to be by keeping your attitude bright and shiny like a brand new penny. This is Donna Siebel, and tomorrow we're going to be talking about a famous movie star, Elaine Heckett. She, her son, is going to be my guest, Luke Yankee, so don't miss one of these shows. Good people, good stories, good times. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.